We'll move on to the last case this morning, which is James. Stephen Andrews versus DuPont. Mr. Rink.
Thank you, Your Honors. Andrew Rink on behalf of Appellant Stephen Andrews. Please the Court, we're here today to look at the District Court's July 12, 2004 order denying the plaintiff's second motion to alter or amend. Specifically, whether the District Court abused its discretion in finding that the plaintiff's motion was successive and directed at the same judgment, and we submit that it was not. The brief history of the case up to that point was that the plaintiff here, Mr. Andrews, was injured when a cargo truck he was driving rolled as he negotiated a curve in a highway, and the plaintiff alleged that 18,000 liters of liquid ink that he was hauling was improperly loaded and shifted, which caused the rollover. On May 5, 2004, the District Court entered summary judgment against the plaintiff, finding that he had not met his burden on the issue of proximate cause, and specifically that it was not a simple negligence case, that the plaintiff needed expert testimony on that issue. The plaintiff filed a timely motion to alter or amend, arguing that it was a simple negligence type issue, and alternatively that the plaintiff could rely on the defendant's expert opinion that if this truck was properly loaded, it would not have tipped unless the plaintiff was speeding as he negotiated the curve. The District Court denied that second motion on July 11th of 2004. And in that July 11th order, the District Court, for the very first time, mentioned the defendant's expert opinion with respect to the speed of Mr. Andrews' truck as a factor in its decision. The Court said, plaintiff claims that summary judgment is inappropriate in that he can, and this is at Appendix 25, in that he can rely on the testimony of Monick, the defendant's expert, to establish an evidentiary basis for his theory that a load shift was the proximate cause of his accident. This is at odds with Monick's findings, where he opined that the stacked totes would not have tipped unless plaintiff had negotiated the curve at a speed of 56 miles per hour or more, and that the totes would not have slid unless plaintiff was traveling at a speed of...
Monick did not testify as to the speed, though. He testified that if the speed was such and such, certain things might happen or might not happen, but I don't think he ever gave any evidence as to what the speed actually was. And as I understand, that seems to be your argument, is that?
Well, it is. I mean, Monick, clearly the truck rolled. The defense expert said the truck would not have rolled if these totes were properly loaded, unless the plaintiff was driving at 60 to, or at a speed of 56 miles per hour or more. And it's important to note that this is the very first time that the court...
Are you saying, is that tantamount to testimony that the truck was, in fact, going that fast?
We think that there's sufficient evidence that the truck was not, in that there is direct eyewitness testimony that the truck was only traveling at 35 miles per hour as it negotiated the curve. So we're arguing the negative, I acknowledge, that if the truck was traveling at 35 miles per hour, as corroborated by the eyewitness testimony following from the driver directly behind, this truck would not have then tipped unless there was an improper loading.
So you're saying it's either got to be one or the other. It can't be something else.
Correct. Because there's no testimony or there was no evidence in the record at the time of summary judgment proceedings that there was anything else, that there was a truck malfunction or that there was an object in the road or any other type of driver negligence.
So you were going to try to prove, in the absence of your own expert, because that expert was stricken, that
yes,
to prove by negative inference that the truck had been improperly loaded.
That was an alternative theory. Obviously, our position was that this was simply a simple negligence case for which there wasn't a need for expert testimony, that lay people on a jury who have driven curves have enough intelligence to reach that conclusion. But given the court's finding that we did, in fact, have to have expert testimony, and then the fact that the court struck our expert, we were left with having to try and rely on their expert as an alternative theory.
Well, as the only remaining theory, and that's all we've got in front of us, even assuming we reach that.
Exactly. We don't need to get into the merits of the argument at this point. The question is today whether or not the district court's finding that the second motion to alter or amend was successive was an abuse of discretion. And we submit that looking back and putting yourselves in the position of counsel at that time, we had a situation where for the very first time the district court mentions plaintiff's experts' opinions with respect to speed, and by the very language of the district court's ruling on June 11th of 2004, where he specifically says that we cannot use their expert because of the fact that he testifies as to speed, we receive this order, and we also know that there's a body of substantive law in Illinois holding, as I said, that an expert's opinion on speed are inadmissible when eyewitness testimony is available.
Yeah, but he didn't testify. He didn't give a statement that the speed was XYZ. He just said if the speed was certain things, that certain things would follow from that.
That is correct. That is correct.
Well, why is that why is that preempted by the eyewitness testimony?
It is in that his testimony was that this truck would not have rolled unless the plaintiff were going this speed. So, again, by negative, he's arguing or he's insinuating that the plaintiff was driving at a speed in excess of 56 miles per hour.
Let me ask this straight something out here. They're saying that the expert would have said that the truck, if properly loaded,
correct,
would not have tipped unless it was going 55 or 6-something miles per hour.
56, that's correct.
And your theory is, on the alternative, that therefore it is unequivocal, based on eyewitness, that the truck was going 35 miles an hour. And the fact that it tipped had to be because it was improperly loaded, because if properly loaded, it'd have to go 55 to tip. Is that your theory?
That is exactly our theory.
Okay, and so it didn't matter that the other witness didn't the expert didn't testify about the speed. He said, from an expert's point of view, that it could not have tipped if properly loaded unless they went 55. Your evidence would be it was going 35 and it tipped, therefore it must have been improperly loaded.
That is correct. And when we received the June 11th order from the district court, where for the first time the defendant's expert's opinions with respect to speed were mentioned, and in fact they weren't even mentioned in defendant's motions for summary judgment, we felt that it was reasonable, again, knowing that there's this body of law in Illinois indicating that an expert can't contradict an eyewitness testimony with respect to speed, we felt it was reasonable to bring this apparent error to the district court's attention to try and correct the error without having to engage in an appeal, which we submitted it was reasonable to do that. For that reason, it was not a successive motion.
What's the mere negligence? What negligence of what? That you're going 35 miles an hour and the truck tips over. What's the negligence? The just by the fact that it happened?
The negligence is that there was an improper loading. I don't want to go outside the scope of today.
But it's strictly that the truck couldn't have turned over otherwise, regardless of speed or something like that.
Correct.
So it didn't matter how fast it was going. It was something happened inside the truck, and therefore it tipped over.
That's correct. And again, I don't want to go outside the scope of the appeal, but there was the eyewitness.
But that was what you wanted to amend. You wanted to amend it to say that.
Correct.
The negligence theory.
Correct. And that was the theory all along, and until the district court ruled that this was not just a simple negligence case, that in fact it was a case where expert testimony was required. And we acknowledge that getting back to the motion to reconsider, they do serve a limited purpose, and that's to correct manifest errors of law or fact and to present newly discovered evidence. And that's what we did here. The speed issue was entirely new. It conflicted with Illinois precedent, and we simply wanted the district court to be alerted to that issue and hopefully allow the court to correct it. So for these reasons, we submit that the district court did abuse its discretion in finding the second motion to be successive. And then obviously we ask that the court remand this case for further proceedings and reverse the district court's decision so that we can get back to the merits of the case. I see my time is up. If there are no further questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ripple?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Raymond Ripple for DuPont Company. We note this case presents rather narrow issues, and may we suggest that the narrowest issue that this court can use to affirm the district court is the timeliness of this second 59E motion. Of course, on its face, it's grossly out of time from the judgment. The argument made by Mr. Andrews is that, in fact, the first 59E actually altered or amended the judgment, creating a second judgment from which his now only surviving order, the second 59E, he now takes to this court. So the linchpin is the first 59E, did it actually alter or amend the judgment? On its face, we suggest no. Under the Charles standard, which adopted, as you know, many of the Supreme Court cases, including the FTC case, the order of June, the order disposing of the first 59E motion, did not disturb or revise any of the rights of the parties. And it did not resolve any ambiguity in the original judgment. And may I just digress for a second and point out that my brother has suggested this morning that this was the first time the district court dealt with Mr. Monarch's testimony. That's not true. In fact, it supported a motion for summary judgment in this case. And maybe more important, this argument that Mr. Andrews now wants to press with this court was his argument on the first 59E motion. He brought to the court, the district court obviously felt they had to deal with it. So he dealt with it. Of course, in the second 59E motion, he explains again, I wasn't adopting that testimony. I was merely pointing out that this is not new testimony, and it doesn't support the theory of the plaintiff Andrews. And if you go back to the complaint, the theory, of course, was the shifting load. Mr. Monarch's testimony doesn't go to that ultimate question as to this truck. He never examined it at all. Finally, on this question of the timeliness of the filing of the order, I draw the court's attention to its own order of February 3rd of this year, which disposed of, there was a lot of motion practice early in this case, back last summer into the fall, regarding notices of appeal, etc. In that order, this court found, citing Charles, that the second order, the second motion, 59E motion, was late. Now, this court applied that in ruling on which notice of appeal was good and which wasn't. But to me, at least, that's the law of the case. This court has found, using the correct standard, the Charles standard, that the second 59E
was untimely.
Now, this court obviously could just follow that or approve of the district court's analysis of the timeliness of this order. Either way, we don't get into the substance of the arguments that are made here. And this is probably, we suggest, humbly suggest to the court that this is probably the best way to resolve on the more substantive question, and looking at the order, the substance of the second order, the court threw it out, throughout the second motion basically on three grounds. One, it wasn't timely. We've already covered that. Secondly, it merely rehashes or raises matters that could have been raised in the first motion. And thirdly, that under Illinois law, and these were some of the matters that my brother was addressing a few minutes ago, that there is a need for expert testimony. And by the time they were finished with summary judgment, plaintiff was fresh out of experts, thanks to the motion to strike. None of that, of course, is before this court. All of those issues are not on this appeal. We believe that the court, district court, properly exercises discretion, remembering what our standard of review is on a 59E, by saying this case requires expert testimony. This is not a running of the red light case. This is not an automobile teeing in an intersection case. This involves, if I may add just a few extra words to the opinion of the court, more complex matters. The physics not only of liquid flow within tanks in the trailer, it involves the whole mechanics of the trailer. It involves the pitch of the road. It's an involved issue. You cannot go to a jury on just on eyewitness testimony as to speed. And anyway, that's not your theory. Your theory was imprecisely, improperly loaded. So we suggest that, and strongly urge, that the district court properly exercise its discretion by saying, no, this is not an ordinary negligence case. This requires expert testimony, and you don't have any. And you can't use Mr. Monix because his testimony, and I just direct the court's attention to his affidavit is included in our supplemental appendix at 9 and 10 appended to our brief. He doesn't go to that question. He goes to the speed and what hypothetically would happen at those speeds. Speeds, by the way, are all of his witnesses are well above all what his witnesses said. So it would have been terribly inconsistent to consider that for the first time, at the urging for the first time of the appellant. So the judge was right. It didn't change the relationship of any of the parties. It didn't change the amount of damages. Nothing of substance. The first order, the June order, on the first motion, didn't do a thing to the judgment. The original judgment stayed the May 5th judgment. So when the second motion was filed, it was late on its face. It was dead late. And since the first motion did not change the first judgment of May, the motion was just a nullity, an untimely matter. This is a case, Your Honors, where unfortunately the appellant filed one too many motions. We all laud the purposes of 59E. We'd love to see more cases straightened out in the district court. That would be great. And having tried a lot of cases, I realize that myself. But in this case, he filed one too many and didn't keep track, perhaps, of where they were. That we submit, unless the court has any specific questions on either of those, either the procedural or the substantive matter, we will submit the case.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I guess you're out of time, Mr. Green. As for the case, we take under advisement, and that completes the arguments for Now it's an afternoon now. So the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Then I teach you.